Welcome back, and thanks for tuning in to Renewable Radio, a new podcast produced by Renewable Energy Alaska Project. My name is Greg Stiegel, and I will be hosting today's episode. We are going to continue our conversation that we started in the last episode with Chris Rose on the Rail Belt Electric Grid. If you haven't listened to part one of this conversation, please go back and take a listen, and you'll get up to speed to continue on the conversation today. If you haven't done so already, go ahead and subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to check out our website, alaskarenewableenergy.org. With that, we'll tune into our conversation with Chris. Enjoy. All right, well, let's just jump in. All right, so thanks for tuning back into our part two of our discussion with Chris Rose on an electric reliability organization for the Rail Belt Grid. If you haven't listened to part one, I suggest you go back and listen to part one. During part one, we got a good background on how we got to where we are today. Chris gave some historical reference to how the electric utility co-ops formed in the middle of the 20th century here in the Rail Belt, and how they largely operate independently of each other. He also gave a background on REAP's work in this realm over the past number of years, and how we here at REAP have identified reforming the electric grid as a good way to integrate renewables onto the grid. For part two of this discussion, we sort of left off at the passing of SB 123, some legislation that we helped get passed this year. And that legislation, among other things, calls for the creation of an electric reliability organization. And as part of that legislation, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska is embarking on a rulemaking process. And we want to take a little deeper dive into what that means and what are some of the outcomes of this rulemaking process. Does that sound about where we left off, Chris?
Yeah, that's accurate. Let's talk about rulemaking.
Yeah, so first I wanted to just kind of get an idea of the process of rulemaking and the relationship that the RCA has to any sort of legislation that passes in regards to electricity in the state. So why are they in charge of making rules for this legislation?
Well, it's a great question, and a lot of people who don't really think hard about where all these regulations come from may not even know that the legislature never makes regulations. The legislature typically is a group of generalists who pass laws, but then delegate authority to an agency that has specific expertise in a certain area to make the rules to implement that law. So at the federal level, for instance, Congress may pass a law about national parks. Well, then the Department of Interior may have to go and make regulations that implement that law regarding national parks. In Alaska, at the state level, when the state legislature passes a law regarding electricity, since the Regulatory Commission of Alaska is the regulatory entity for electricity in the state, it's often delegated the authority by the commission to make rules to implement the law. And those rules are typically more specific, more in the weeds than the statute that the legislature passes, which is typically broader. So in this case, the Senate Bill 123, which passed back in March and was signed into law by Governor Dunleavy in April, states in several different places that the Regulatory Commission of Alaska shall make regulations to further define what we mean here. He didn't say it exactly that way, but that's what they meant when they said that the RCA shall make regulations. There's also some parts of the law that may not have explicitly said RCA, go ahead and make regulations, but the commission on its own can make regulations to make it clear to the regulated entities and to the public how the law is to be implemented and how it works.
And then the RCA is given this responsibility because inherently they have the expertise to make these regulations. Is that right? Or are they soliciting help from other people to make sure they get everything right?
Well, they are the agency that has the expertise. So they're the agency that, in this case, the legislature delegates authority to. If it was, for instance, again, using a different example, a law regulating hunting and fishing, well, then it would be a different state agency that would be doing the rulemaking. But yes, in this case, it's the RCA that has the expertise, and the RCA is free to contract out, if necessary, to get more information if they need it. But typically, they have the in-house expertise to come up with the regulations. Now, they also solicit through the public process that we're in right now feedback from interested parties. And so there's a couple layers of feedback that go on in the rulemaking process generally. There is informal feedback that the agency, in this case, the RCA, can solicit before they issue draft regulations. And then there's more formal feedback that the public can give on regulations after an agency actually notices draft regulations. And once an agency notices draft regulations, a law called the Alaska Administrative Procedures Act kicks in. And there is an Administrative Procedures Act at the federal level too, but basically the Administrative Procedures Act dictates how rulemaking processes go generally. And in Alaska, once a set of regulations is noticed, then there's a specific amount of time that the public has to provide formal comment to the agency about those proposed rules. We're not at that point yet, but we will be getting to that point. We're still in an informal stage right now.
Sure. So let's dive into some of the details of SB 123 and how the RCA is going to approach that. So in the last episode, you outlined a few things that SB 123 is accomplishing, one of which is mandating the creation of an electric reliability organization, which will focus on reliability standards and could create interconnection standards. And also has a cost recovery for transmission component that's going to help with tariffs. How is the RCA approaching the rulemaking process for all that? Because there's a lot of details that need to be covered in SB 123. So how are they kind of outlining this process?
Well, it's a good question because in this case, the legislature has not given the RCA the normal amount of time to make regulations. I think everybody is seeing some urgency in getting this thing done. Typically, the RCA has a 2-year window to make regulations. So that's a long time. In this case, the law was passed in March, signed into law in April, and the law said all regulations must be final by July 1st, 2021. So really, the RCA has only been given about 13 months to get all the regulations for all the different aspects of this law developed and finalized. And there is a portion of the law that says that entities can apply to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska in October of 2021 after these regulations are final, to become the electric reliability organization for the state. And since that's only about 14 months away or so, Any entity that might want to apply to become the electric reliability organization for the rail belt really needs to get as much guidance as they can so that their application conforms to the rules that the RCA may make between now and July. So there are a couple of different things going on. One is that the RCA is making these rules to implement the law. And one is there is a group that is organizing voluntarily to start pulling together an application to become the ERO. And that application, as I mentioned, will be due in October of 2021. Sure. Well, one of the things that this law says is that the ERO shall be ruled or governed by a board of directors that is either an independent board or a balanced stakeholder board. Or a combination thereof. So that really is an important thing for this Rail Belt Reliability Council to know, because the Rail Belt Reliability Council, in as part of its application to the RCA next year, is going to have to have as part of that application a governance structure. So what the RCA has done is broken up all these different issues to implement Senate Bill 123 into three different parts. And they've started with this issue of governance, because this issue of governance is a really important issue to guide the application of the Rail Belt Reliability Council. So they've broken it up into three different dockets. The first one being governance, the second one, we're focused on governance, and the second one being focused on the integrated resource planning that the electric reliability organization will do, as well as this issue of pre-approval by the regulatory commission in the future of all new large generation and transmission projects in the rail belt. That has not been something that the RCA has had the authority to do before Senate Bill 123. So now the RCA has to write rules so everyone knows how those pre-approval processes in the future will go. That's also part of the second docket. The third docket, and these are all going to be going in sequential order. Third docket will be about basically everything else that we need to have rules on to implement Senate Bill 123. And that includes the reliability standards themselves, the interconnection standards that you mentioned, the cost recovery mechanisms for transmission investments that you mentioned. And those things all have to be part of what's called the tariff, or the set of rules that the electric reliability organization is also going to have and will be part of the Rail Belt Reliability Council submission or application to the RCA to become the ERO for the rail belt. So, three different dockets. The first one started June 3rd with a technical conference on this issue of governance. And then on July 29th, there was a second technical conference on this issue of governance and internal rules for an electric reliability organization. And so REAP has participated in both of those technical conferences. REAP has also submitted comments to the commission to help inform how rules get written on governance. And we're now in the stage where the commission is probably soon going to be starting to write draft regulations that they have told the parties will likely become public and be noticed to the public sometime in early September. Simultaneously to the end of this first docket, the commission is starting to solicit ideas or topics that will be the subject of a technical conference for the second docket on integrated resource planning and pre-approval. And the hope is that that second docket will be finished up sometime by the end of the year. And then the third docket will begin sometime around January and hopefully finish up sometime in the spring. That way the commission meets its statutory deadline of getting all the regulations finalized before July 1st of 2021. But it also allows everybody who is interested to really focus in on certain areas at a time. So there's not this necessity to be doing everything all at once.
Okay. So I have a couple questions on kind of each of the individual dockets here. So first, in terms of governance, in part one of our conversation, you mentioned an independent system operator versus a unified system operator, which is the idea of having someone completely independent in charge versus having, you know, a combination of utility and other stakeholders operating the system. So now in terms of the ERO, I know this is different than a system operator. Is it the same sort of questions that are being asked, whether it should be an independent governing board or a combination of folks here who are operating it? And if that's the question, then how is the RCA going to go about answering that question? Are they looking towards folks in the lower 48? Are they looking at other people who are doing this to kind of figure out, how do they determine what's the best mode of governance?
Okay. Well, it's a good question, and we need to sort out some of these terms. So governance is different than operations. And as you mentioned, a system operator is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about an electric reliability organization. If we were talking about a system operator, I think people would be a lot more concerned about having a completely independent board of directors. Because the system operator is making a lot of decisions about which power plants get to be turned on and off at any given time. That is not going to be one of the functions of this electric reliability organization. Although I think there's still a hope that at some point a system operator may be developed for the rail belt, but it's likely to be a separate organization. It's likely not to be just another function that gets tacked on to the electric reliability organization's list of things to do. So with the electric reliability organization, we're focused a lot on the reliability standards and the setting up of interconnection standards and the planning. Those are all still very important decisions. And the legislature essentially allows, through the Senate Bill 123, allows for this new entity to be governed in by a governing board or a board of directors. It could be one of three things. It could either be an independent board or a balanced stakeholder board or a combination independent / balanced stakeholder board. So the question that the commission's looking at regarding this is, really, what's the definition? How do they define what the legislature is calling an independent board? How do they define what the legislature is calling a balanced stakeholder board? How do they define what the legislature is calling a combination balanced stakeholder / independent board? And those are some of the questions that REAP and other participants who've been making comments in the regulatory process so far have also been addressing. From our perspective, what REAP has stated in its comments is essentially that we believe that balanced should be defined as a board that cannot be dominated by any one set of stakeholders. And I think that's pretty, it's a pretty common definition that you see in the lower 48. There certainly have been references to similar organizations in the lower 48 as the comments have come into the commission, but there's not a direct parallel to those kinds of organizations in the lower 48 and the organization we're trying to set up in the rail belt. In the lower 48, we've got the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is kind of like the RCA, but only for the federal level. And we've got the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, or NERC, which is kind of like the electric reliability organization for the country. And so there is some parallel between FERC and NERC and the RCA and the ERO. But that's, you know, that's about as far as it goes in terms of a strict parallel. But I do think that what we've been arguing is that we want to make sure that this is a functional organization, in that we want a balanced group of viewpoints and interests to not only be part of the governing board, but also to actually have a real ability to be heard and a real ability to, you know, influence decision making and not have one group be able to dominate the decisions of the organization.
Sure. So there's about a month or so before they issue their draft regulations, right?
Is that the RCA. Accurate? Yep.
The RCA, yeah. And then you also mentioned that this is a public process, and that REAP has been giving feedback and other people are giving feedback before the regulations come. What role does, you know, someone who's not as well versed in this subject or just the general public member of either one of these co-ops or not, what role do they play in this process, and should they be playing a role, someone who isn't as well versed as yourself?
Well, it's a good question, because there's really kind of two parts of the process. There's the before draft regulations are issued, which we're in now, in the first docket, and then there's the after draft regulations. It's clearly easier for people to make comments on draft regulations than to be suggesting to the commission what those draft regulations should say. I think only the entities that are really following this on a day-to-day basis are typically involved in that first half of the process, the half we're in right now, where we're suggesting to the commission the kinds of principles that we want them to consider when they write the regulations. However, once those draft regulations come out, we're hoping that we'll be able to analyze what those regulations are fairly quickly and come up with some suggested comments that not only REAP would make, but that other people who might have the same interests as REAP may also want to make. And so there hopefully will be a way for REAP to guide those folks in the public who might want to make comments in the direction of those the comments they might want to make.
Sure.
And that, but we won't be in that stage until we see draft regulations from the RCA and have a chance to determine what changes we might want to suggest the commission make. Because after that comment period, the commission may change the draft regulations before they promulgate final regulations. And once the final regulations are out there, that's it. That part of the process is over. So in this case, the rules on governance will be finalized, and we won't be going back to them. We'll be moving on to the second docket, and we'll be starting to make the rules for integrated resource planning and pre-approval of large projects. And then once those regulations are finalized, we won't be going back to them. We'll be moving on to the third docket, which is focused on all the other things that are necessary to make rules on.
Well, that's good to hear that yourself and REAP are going to be offering some guidance to the general public. I think if I were to venture a guess, I would say that the general average person is not reading draft regulations for fun in their spare time. So happy to hear that you're on the case and will be able to kind of provide a little glimpse and insight into the inner workings of how this thing's being stood up and being able to, you know, offer a clear picture. So excited to see that come out and be able to kind of blast that out to the general public.
Yeah, we'll see what it says. I mean, it may be that the regulations are pretty darn good and we like them. And in that case, we may not need as much support from the public, but, you know, we'll just have to see what they look like. That's going to be pretty soon, I think.
Good. Well, this has been informative. I think this seems like a good stopping point for us as we've gone through the three dockets here. I think there is a bit more to talk about, but I'd like to take a quick break. And then when we reconvene, we'll create a part three of this conversation and you know, we've talked about the Rail Belt Reliability Council, this voluntary effort that's going to be applying to the RCA to become the Electric Reliability Organization. And I think that warrants a little bit more conversation. So if you don't mind coming back another time, then we can dive into what's going on with the Rail Belt Reliability Council.
Be happy to. Thanks a lot, Greg.
All right. Thanks, Chris. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to Renewable Radio. You just heard a conversation with Chris Rose. We focused on the Regulatory Commission's rulemaking process for recent legislation that passed that's going to guide our Rail Belt electric grid. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, and you'll get notified for our next installment of the conversation when we'll look at the creation of the Rail Belt Reliability Council, a voluntary effort to create an electric reliability organization. We look forward to having you next time.